good evening, and thank you all for coming. We appreciate you coming out tonight. This is the Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Study Citizens Involvement Committee, a public meeting. And tonight on the agenda, we're going to have Curtis Baker talk about some items that have been brought in front of our technical advisory and policy committees. Then we're going to have Dave Gillet, our engineer, give us a report on pedestrian and bicycle safety. Then we have guest speaker, Nick Montas from Summit Metro Parks, Chief of Planning and Development. He's going to speak on the Valley View plan for the Cascade Metro Parks. And then we're going to talk about Jane's Walks and Bike Month after that. And then we'll open up for discussion. So, Curtis?
Thank you. Dory, I'm going to put you in charge of the Cavs game. So every 15 minutes or so, if you could just give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down, I'd appreciate it. You got a cell phone, don't you? No, I'm just teasing. Well, like as Daryl said, welcome everybody. Welcome to our CIC. We're excited to have you. Appreciate it, especially considering it looks like it's downpouring out there now. So I'm glad you made the effort. Really, what we've been talking about, and I think what we're going to be doing moving forward is, or what we're working on right now, is a draft human resources coordinated services transportation plan, which is looking at, our committees are looking at a report that's looking at recommendations for how transit agencies and social service agencies can work better together to provide services to those in need. Metro RTA and PARTA, Portage County Regional Transit Authority, have teamed up with us to develop the report. That's sort of a big, meaty report that I think, Jeff, you talked about at our last CIC meeting, correct?
March 1st,
yeah. So we talked about it here at the last meeting. In May, now our policy committee is going to vote to approve that later next week. Other things that we've been working on are our work program, which sets out our work products for the next year, which starts in July of 2018. It's technically fiscal year 2019, but looks at, and our committees are reviewing that right now, which is looking at things that we are going to be doing in the upcoming year, which include doing our usual crash reports. Doing our planning data, forecast work, congestion analysis, all the things that as a transportation agency we're going to be required, or that we're required to do. Otherwise, just random, basically random stuff. One of the, from a funding perspective, you know, the Trump administration released a sort of a guidelines for what they'd like to see as a transportation funding package. It was asking quite a bit of locals, kind of flipping an 80-20 local match, which is usually 20%. Their administration recommended a 20-80 match, so 20% federal, 80% other sources, which it's pretty much been a non-starter with this Congress, and as you can imagine, there have been many other things floating around the political realm, so it's not, it is, you know, at one point, this discussion of infrastructure was picking up speed. And now it's back on the back burner again. So we don't really anticipate anything happening with infrastructure funding at this time, maybe at the beginning of 2019, but it's very difficult to say, especially with the elections coming up, which, again, we have a primary, the primaries this month, and then November will be an election, which will be interesting also from the state level. You know, as we've had Governor Kasich for the last 8 years, and if there is a change in party, typically what we do see is trickle down effects from even from us from working with ODOT, because you know we start to see a whole bunch of, there's a lot of turnover when that happens and ODOT policies change. So that's something that we'll be keeping an eye on as we move forward. But otherwise, we continue to work on updating our long-range plan, which will be out to 2045. And Dave Poulet and the TIP side is continuing to update our transportation improvement program, making sure that we fund projects, essentially. The big projects that we're looking at now to get moving in early 2019 are the Howe Road Reconstruction Project by Chapel Hill. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that project or know that it's going to happen. All of the concrete, basically from Home Avenue all the way to, does it go all the way to Buchholzer. They're ripping up all of the concrete and putting in a whole new road. And the maintenance of traffic will be essentially one-way maintenance of traffic. So you're only going to be able to get off at Howe during the construction. And when you get off, you are not going to be able to travel travel east towards the mall on the road. They'll actually be having you go out and into the service roads, essentially. And if you need to get all the way around to the mall, you've got to go down home to Independence, to Buchholzer, and do a big thing. So that's going to be a big deal. And while that's going on, they're also repairing the concrete from Graham Road up to, I believe, 303. It's a large project where, again, we're going to be ripping out concrete, and that's also going to be happening most likely at the same time starting this summer. Not on top of the Central Interchange project and everything else that's going on. The Main Street Tiger Grant is also going to start in 2019. So there is a lot of public works projects going on, and a lot of which will negatively impact all of our traveling. Also, if anyone's familiar with the northern part of the county, State Route 303 in Streetsboro, our project is underway, and 303 is now closed. So you cannot actually make the connection from Hudson to Streetsboro through 303. There's a pretty large detour there as well. And that is because that road floods about 7 or 8 times a year where there's major detouring. And so what they're going to do is be raising the road about 1.5 feet. And just by raising it that much, we anticipate being able to almost eliminate all the flooding. So there's some really cool projects, ones that I think have been in the pipeline for a long time. And I guess with that, you know, I'd like to get to our other items, so I'd be happy to answer any questions. Or if there are any comments about roadway concerns, et cetera.
They're just trying to keep us in there so we can't get out.
Yeah, that's right. Make it so you don't want to go anywhere else. Yeah.
And then your aqueduct street.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's yeah. Fun. Yeah. Well, and anything related to CSO is just, you know. But, yeah, so we'll feel your pain. Everybody will be feeling
it. It'll
be
nice when it's done, though.
Yeah. And all these, you know, that's the thing is so many of these, and we talked about this at the last meeting, that so many of the old concrete roads that were put in 50 years ago are at their end of their useful life. And some of them, I think even on Route 8, I think they were done poorly. And so this is sort of righting past wrongs, but at the tune of quite a few million bucks. So.
But following up on my comment, the sustainability and long-term use of concrete may be better than asphalt in some applications.
It might be. Yeah, I think
flexible pavement design, asphalt has a useful life. Help me, engineers. What's the standard useful life of asphalt pavement?
2 years.
3 years? Is that what you're saying?
No.
He's not an engineer.
No. No, it's, I mean, most, yeah, I mean, I think 10, 12, and if,
and
what
concrete
there's,
is?
It can be, I think, up to 30
properly,
or 50. Yeah, I mean, it can
then
last.
Then why are we not doing things for sustainable development for the future? I fall back to last month's comments, or 2 months ago, on the asphalt lobby having the upper hand with ODOT and making these decisions.
You might be right. It's not our choice in this case. I think for most communities who are looking at fitting the, you know, paying the bill, that they're not eager to do concrete either. And I think
they're not planning on being in office.
No. So it's
short-term life expectancy.
And I think the other problem with concrete is that if you do have problems with concrete, those problems never go.
Put it in the contract, design and maintain.
Nobody's going to sign that one unless they get a pretty big, hefty amount of money.
Again, the contractor there on the East Leg 76, I think, did a pretty darn good job. That's holding up very well.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Kurt. Dave Pillay will give his report on bicycle and pedestrian safety.
Okay. Dave Pillay, and one of the things I do at AMATS is highway safety, analyze highway safety. For many years, it's been focused on vehicles, but lately, we've been trying to shift a lot of that. We've been trying to give a lot more attention to bicycle and pedestrian safety. Unfortunately, this photo is from South Main Street. I don't know if any of you remember last summer. I think there were one or two pedestrians killed there.
Yeah, and two middle school students.
Yeah, two very unfortunate. But anyhow, those are just some of the things that we have to try to stop from happening. A little introduction. First of all, a little introduction on bicycles. In our area, the biking culture is probably more one of recreation rather than transportation. My opinion, but I think that may be changing, and that's what we're trying to do here, is maybe change that from just a bicycling from just a recreation to actually a means to go to the grocery store, to work, wherever. We have over 100 miles of multi-purpose trails built since 2000. AMATS provided over $12 million of funding toward those trails. Using trails is pretty safe. There's hardly any vehicle conflicts with vehicles other than a few places where they cross highways. We're slowly adding bike lanes when we have a chance with new construction and with this concept of a road diet where we actually take a four-lane road, reduce it to three, and use the extra space for bike lanes. One problem we have is connectivity issues with the trails and the bike lanes. They're kind of, they just don't connect a lot of places where people live to places where people need to go. This is a map of our bike trail and bike lane system. The green lines are bike trails. The one that that's probably everyone is most familiar with is the towpath. That would be the, I don't have my pointer. I'm just lost without my pointer. But anyhow, that's the one that runs the complete length of Summit County. That took a long time to complete. Especially some challenges right here through Akron. Getting it through downtown. Slowly we're trying to, now that the towpath is done, what one of our goals is at AMATS is to try to connect trails and try to connect bike lanes and try to connect things together so that we have a more complete system. A pedestrian is defined as any person traveling by foot. In our safety analysis, it includes anybody in the street right away, including those on rollerblades, skateboards, and in wheelchairs. Pedestrian safety depends on a lot of different things. Foremost, probably availability and condition of sidewalks. Availability and condition of crosswalks and how pedestrian friendly an area may be. But unfortunately, many causes of pedestrian related incidents is behavior related. When you start looking at the police reports, you begin to see a pattern. This is probably on this is not one of the best practices for pedestrian sidewalks. This is actually right around the corner from where I live. This sidewalk is along Market Street. One side of the Market Street is residential. The other side has some coffee shops and things that people walk to. Last summer they did gas reconstruction, reconstructed the gas lines. There wasn't much forethought into reconstructing the sidewalk, so the contractor only replaced the pieces that he disturbed and left a lot of sidewalk in very poor repair. I can't imagine like getting a wheelchair or baby stroller through sections of this. I know that things like this happen, but this is not on the top of the best practices list. Couple of things that bike and pedestrian crashes do have in common. They have a very high percentage of injuries, 81% and 85%. They're more random and spread out. It's really hard to pinpoint a certain intersection or a certain segment of highway that needs bicycle or pedestrian crashes. They just sort of happen kind of randomly all over the place. Many of them involve younger people. Bike riders, pedestrians, drivers may not be aware of the rules they need to follow. And I firmly believe that education is a very effective countermeasure for increasing bicycle and pedestrian safety. This shows the last 10 years of bicycle crashes. The last 3 years are the 3 years that we've most recently analyzed, 2014, 2015, and 2016. 15 and 16 seem to be pretty good years. They dropped from 14, and when you look at this, they dropped considerably from 13, which was kind of one of our peak years. So hopefully this trend will continue. Because we're certainly headed in the right direction. Bicycle crashes have a couple. Something happened to my one graph there. 66% of bicycle crashes happen at intersections. Once you start looking at police reports, you see some trends. One of the trends is a lot of younger riders may not be familiar with the traffic rules and laws, and may blow through stop signs, signals, whatever. And then also, you can see that for some reason, there's a big spike in crashes in September. For some reason, you do expect bicycle crashes to increase in the summer months, but the only thing I can guess is maybe it's back to school time, and kids are riding more, riding their bikes to school, I'm not sure. But that's always been, it seems like September has always been the worst month for bicycle crashes. This is a pure graph of the ages of people involved in bicycle crashes. The median age is 26, and you can see that it's kind of skewed toward younger ages. That one spike at 68, age 68 is kind of odd. The only thing I can think of is people are retiring. Maybe they're riding their bikes again. I'm not sure, but you have that one spike at 68. And I must apologize. I did my graphs in a little different version of Excel, and when I imported it, it kind of did something funky to the numbers, so I do apologize for that. Here's a map of bicycle crashes in the AMATS area. As you can see, they're kind of spread out, kind of all over the place. The best summary I can give of where they happen is they're kind of proportional to population density, which I guess only makes sense because you probably have more people actually riding in those areas.
Dave, if I can too, and I think too, even where you do see, say, clusters of crashes, I think the reality is when you dig into the finer points of those, it's not like they're all happening because of a roadway issue. It's someone did something grossly illegal and got hit for it.
Yes.
someone basically was riding the wrong way on the street, or someone
exactly.
was it's not necessarily like, oh, well, there's a lot in downtown Ravenna, but they're all very... It's not like a consistent cars turning right into bicyclists or something like that.
They're all different. Basically, they're all different. Actually, I have some examples that I'm going to show you in a few minutes. Actually, here they are now. Now, these are actually parts of police reports. I didn't put the whole police report on the slide. I just cut out the picture of the. Diagram and the description of what happened. These are examples of intersection crashes. As you can see, the first one is very common. The bike is on the sidewalk and the car is turning right. I don't know why the car doesn't see the bike. Maybe the bike is kind of coming up from behind and the driver just doesn't see it. The car turns, the bike doesn't stop, and you have a collision. The one on the bottom is an example of a bicyclist just running a stop sign and hitting a car. One thing I noticed is you always think of these crashes as a car hitting a bike, but it's amazing how many times the opposite happens. Quite likely these were younger riders, especially the one on the bottom, maybe just didn't realize that you need to obey the stop signs.
Can you go back to that sign again? The scene that you show there where the bicycle gets hit by the car where it's turning.
Yes.
The bicycle's on the street, on the sidewalk.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's another,
If that bicycle had been in a lane marked, like state road is marked, that car would have seen him because he would come up alongside him.
Yes.
And that's, to me, a good reason for not riding on the sidewalk.
Right. Yeah. But the perceived safety for a lot of people is they think they're safer.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Now, at least one thing this guy's doing, he is on the sidewalk, but at least he's going riding with the traffic.
Right.
In a minute, I'll have an example of what happens when you ride on the sidewalk against traffic.
I have a question. Is it lawful to ride on the sidewalk? I hear different stories. I don't know what to believe anymore. Some people say it's against the law, and others say it's just a safety.
The state
is not saying anything about it, but the cities do.
What does Akron say?
Akron, I believe, says it doesn't matter. And they don't have anything to say about it.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things like that law might come into... might be really important and come into play if there was some type of a court case, like if there were an injury or a fatality and there was some kind of a court case, but most of the time it just isn't really enforced. And but you should, whenever possible, ride on the street with traffic, same direction as traffic. This is a couple of examples of non-intersection bicycle crashes. The one on top is probably a young rider, and he's on probably a residential street, and he's just kind of playing, and he just decides to make a turn and doesn't pay attention to traffic, turns right in front of a vehicle. The one on the bottom is very similar to the one in the previous example where you have a car turning into a driveway, and the car just turns right in front of the bicyclist. I saw this actually happen once on my way to work one morning, and I don't know how you cannot see the bicyclist there other than you have a lot of drivers just not paying attention is what it comes down to. Here's a couple examples of driveway-related crashes. We've all been in a hurry. We've all backed out or pulled out of our drive too quickly without looking. The one on top is a bicyclist, just probably a younger kid, a younger rider, just darting out from a driveway in front of a vehicle. And the one on the bottom is probably the worst case scenario where you have the bicyclist is riding, first of all, he's riding against traffic, and then you have a vehicle that's going to turn right, so the vehicle driver is not even looking in the direction the bicycle's coming from, plus you have a couple bushes that make it even worse. So these are just real-life examples I just pulled off of the many police reports I look at. Pedestrian crash trends, they kind of tend to be all over the place. They kind of go up and down, kind of like bike crashes, but they have been, they went down a little bit in 16. Once again, I apologize for the funky numbers. I just, I'm not sure what's going on here, but they kind of just tend to go up and down. They tend to happen at intersections and at mid-block areas, almost the same. There's like, you know, intersections, you feel an intersection is more safe, but you know, statistics don't really show that, because a lot of people don't walk with the walk signal or pay attention to the signals and just kind of walk out in front of traffic. The median age for, the month of the year is, I thought this was interesting. Now, it tends to be, you know, pedestrians tend to, accidents tend to happen more evenly throughout the year. I mean, I ride my bike in the summertime, but every day I'm a pedestrian. I walk to and from my car to work. So, like, every day of the year, I'm a, or every all through the year, I'm a pedestrian, but only in the summer I'm a bike rider. But for some reason, you have this this upward trend in September, if the school, when the school months school starts, and in October, it always peaks in October. This has been a common trend for a long time. So it could be days are getting shorter. There's a little bit less daylight. There's still, the weather's decent. There's still a lot of people out. Halloween, I'm not sure, but it always tends to peak in October. The median age is 28. Once again, this is a pure graph of all the ages of the last 3 years of pedestrian crash, people involved in pedestrian crashes in the last 3 years. Once again, younger ages seem to be involved more. And here's a map of the 2014-16 pedestrian crashes, very similar to the bike map, proportional to probably population density. If you zoom in on this map, you might see a few more around schools, but surprisingly, there's not a whole lot more like around the universities. So it's just it's a very similar characteristic as bike crashes. So concluding, bike crashes, pedestrian crashes have very high percentage of injuries, random and spread out. Many involve younger people, and many of them are caused because a lot of the people involved just don't know the rules they need to follow. And once again, I strongly feel education is a strong countermeasure. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
A couple of comments, Dave.
Okay.
In your picture that you showed of the bicyclist, there was a spike at 68. If you go back and look at the pedestrians, there's a little spike at 68 there, too.
Yeah.
What is it about 68?
I think we found a big birthday party.
Pedestrians and bicyclists.
Yeah, a bunch of 68-year-olds.
Once again, I wish I could figure that out. I'm not sure. Maybe I just.
That makes must be a hormonal problem.
Yeah, it's not with pedestrians. It's not quite as pronounced.
No, it isn't, but it was interesting. It was a spike there, the same as the point.
Now, if I would graph motorcycles, I think you'd see something similar, because surprisingly. A lot of older people, baby boomers, retiring, they have a little extra money, so they go out and buy a motorcycle. But sometimes their skills are not at the same level as when they had a bike back when they were 20.
That's true.
Yeah. So you'd see that. that. You'd see that with motorcycles too.
The other comment is the question about things spiking in September for accidents.
Yes.
Part of that for biking, anyhow, is that as you get into the, it's starting to get darker earlier.
Yes.
We are usually still planning the same length of ride, starting at 6 or 6:30. And by the time we come back, it's dark.
Yeah, you're dealing with more dusk conditions.
Yeah, I have been caught, and in the valley especially, the valley gets dark quick. It's different down here. It just seems like it gets dark really quick. And it seems like the weather is really nice yet in September, so you still want to get out, you still want to do things, but the days are much shorter.
And we don't adjust our time schedules.
Yes.
And then the final question or point is that we talked about the wrong way rider. That's actually against the law to ride against the traffic.
It
should be enforced by the police. But I've never seen a police pull people over. And I know on State Road out where I work, there's some people there that ride their bikes the wrong way all the time. I think they're primarily the day workers, the migrant workers, and they just don't know the difference. And if the police would just stop it, tell them what's wrong, because it's bad for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. So anyhow, one last thing, switching gears, is our bike website, and we offer a lot of valuable advice on and information on our website. So other than that...
Sorry, David, did you have another question?
Yes, sure.
Several times it mentions bikers aren't following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a printout somewhere of the rules?
Yes,
but it is common sense?
There is. If you go to the state government website, they actually have a section on bicycle rules.
Okay.
They break out all the bicycle laws and laws how they apply to bicycles.
We have a lot of the rules on our Switching Gears website, too.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, a lot of your basic rules. I mean, first of all, if you're riding your bike on the highway, you should follow the same rules as traffic. Stop signs, if the red light's red. I mean, I see people on bikes all the time. They'll look, nothing's coming. They'll just go right through the stop sign or through the red light. Pretty much the rules are about the same as with vehicles. I mean, you wouldn't drive your car on the wrong side of the road. So,
a few safety tips too on the map.
Okay.
Switching Gears website would be better.
I wanted to point out the address. It's there's a hyphen and it's .org. Just wanted to make sure because there's different ones out there.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Now we'll move right into Nick Moskow, the Moskow's. The chief of planning and development for Summit Metro Park, so give his plan on the Valley View area. Hi, everyone.
Now I'm going to dim the lights once I get this thing up.
Set the mood.
Yeah.
We get some drinks.
Don't fall asleep.
I'm good now.
Again, I'm Nick Moskis.
So we got
Metro Parks. I'm the chief of planning and development, and so it is funny. This is the former Valley View golf course, and it is not going to be a golf course any longer. It's the Valley View area of Cascade Valley, and I'll show you Cascade Valley Metro Park. I'll show you a plan which will kind of make sense of that. So in 1925, we had a master plan done by the Olmsted brothers. Their father did the design of Central Park. And at that time, they identified the parcel Valley View, which we just got 2 years ago at the time. And you can read what they said about it. And it took nearly 100 years to get it, but we're really proud to have it. And you'll see that it's really a missing piece for our park system. So context-wise, it's a 200-acre former golf course, as I said. And if you draw a line side to side down the county and top to bottom, it's right in the middle of the county. And in fact, our headquarters, which is probably, as the crow flies, not more than a quarter of an acre, it was located in where it's at because they drew that line and found that parcel and built the building there. But it's really connected to a lot of our properties. So We're zooming in a little bit. So Valley View is the orange parcel there. And one thing right away you see is the Cuyahoga River goes right through. And I can tell you, as many times as I've been on the towpath, I've been with Park District for 2 years, but before that, I was a consultant, and I always noted that when I was on the towpath, you never really see the river or touch the river. And we really view Valley View as a great opportunity to access the river, and we'll show you more about that. And the adjacent parks, so the red is Sand Run Park. To the right, which is blue, I don't know if you can see that very well, is the gorge. And then surrounding Valley View is Cascade Valley. So that's why Cascade Valley View is not going to be called Valley View Metro Park. It's the Valley View area of the Cascade Valley Metro Park. And so a couple things to see there. The purple line is the scenic railway. The yellow line is the towpath trail. And the white lines that go through the adjacent parks are all foot trails. So you can see how this park is really critical to connecting a lot of layers of transportation. So I'm going to talk about the site restoration first. We at our heart are a natural resource-based entity. So we're going to restore the site. We're going to take it from being a golf course to being something different. So this is an aerial photograph from 1932. It was the last dairy farm in Summit County, but it was heavily used for agricultural. And in all of the years, in the 70s, it became a golf course. They added a bunch of under drains to dewater the site. There's actually storm sewers that have easements that go right through the site and into the river. And on the other side, on our property, is one of the combined sewer overflows that outlets into the Cuyahoga River. So one of our primary tasks is the hatch areas there is the forest restoration. I mean, there's going to be a couple things that I'll go through. But we are, to get ready for the forest, we actually went and killed all of the sod, all the non-native grass on the site. We seeded with a native prairie mix and planted native trees. So I want to show you what we did was, so here's the property, and there's so many people that are like, oh, that golf course, and then the Metro Parks comes in. You know, we kill it all. But then what we did was we had volunteers gather over 200,000 nuts from out throughout the county. And this is in the early phase. They came in like this. These young ladies, another person in the back, sorted them all and actually floated them. If they sink, they're not good. So they went through and sorted all of the nuts. We had over 600 people over 2 days come in and plant the nuts. We planted 120 tree nuts. And this is during the planting, but there were Girl Scout groups, there were every kind of group you can imagine. And if you can imagine a school kid going out to a site that looks like this and be able to plant a tree and then go back. I mean, it's going to be beautiful when it grows up, but what a legacy to create. So then, now I'm talking about the other hatched area, which is wetland restoration. All of the tiles that are out there, all those under drains are going to be disabled. We're going to construct streams, wetlands, and plant wetland plants. This project is going out to bid in 2 weeks. It represents about $700,000 worth of work. All of the work that we're doing on the site is via grant money. We're very fortunate that the things that we do are very fundable because we're restoring this. If this could have turned into a housing development, and you talk about stormwater and the impact on the environment, we're really turning that back. And the next thing I'm going to talk about is along the river. We're actually creating stormwater storage on the river and restoring the river. We have a meeting, our third meeting with NOAA and the Army Corps of Engineers on Monday. That project represents about $4 million worth of work, and we look like we're going to be fully funded on that. So the existing river is very channelized through the park. We're going to open it more up where that yellow line is and kind of spread everything out. And again, it will help with stormwater issues downstream. So we really look at now, so the park's restored, so what do the connections look like? So I'm going to kind of go through some of those with you. A huge connection that I already mentioned is the water. At the center of the park, we really want to connect to the water. Down in the bottom left-hand corner is the Chicago River. The Chicago River, they recently, they always had this river walk, but what happened is you had to walk up these steps and then back down the other set of steps there. They added these boardwalks, they're floating, they're beautiful, stainless steel ceiling on them, so you can go from these different rooms, and they reclassified the river. Instead of for transportation and industry, they changed it to recreation, which allowed them to go after the polluters upstream. And you can see people are now out on the river, and even this place is called, this one is called the Marsh, and you can see that low little dock that allows people to get into a kayak or a canoe right from the dock, and it's really beautiful. The one on the top is the Bronx River. I mean, if we have people like can access the river that easy in the Bronx, what can we do? And the bottom is the Scioto River in downtown Columbus. This used to be underwater, but once the dam was removed, they did restoration down there. So we're really looking forward to this water connection. Also, we're working with the National Park Service. We actually had a meeting yesterday. We're going to work with them to build a new put-in. And this is a little bit old. We showed a put-in at Zelaya's. That would have been a six-mile trip. We're actually going to build one on National Park land closer to the our Hampton Hills Park. So you'll be able to put in a canoe at Valley View and take out 3.5 miles downstream. We're also going to have livery service from Valley View, where once the dam comes down in Cuyahoga Falls, that's where the whitewater will begin. So if you're on a canoe trip, you can get out and get onto our livery vehicle, and they'll take you down to Valley View. After you're going through the whitewater, you can get into that same vehicle and go back up to the top of the rapid. So we're really, or another livery service that will take you downstream. So we're really excited about that. Also, as I pointed out, the Scenic Railway is right across the road at Big Bend. We have a stop there where we'll have canoe storage on site, canoe kayak storage. So you can actually kayak down the river and get on a train and come back and get off and walk back to Valley View. We're really excited about that. So another level of connection is to pedestrians and bicycles. So we're going to connect the towpath to the bike and hike trail. And I don't know if you're not familiar with our network, I'm going to show you what that means. So the towpath, and this is kind of clipping, this goes all the way up the county. So this is the towpath. This is the Freedom Trail, which is under construction. We have one section left to build. And this is kind of like Bigfoot, the Akron Secondary Trail. It's the abandoned rail line that parallels Route 8 through Cuyahoga Falls.
Not abandoned, formally.
Well, we're in the process of working a legal agreement with Metro RTA to allow a trail to be constructed there. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that. They did evaluation of determined the value of the rail for movement of cargo, and they felt there was no value to it, so it really opened the door for us. And Curtis and I have been talking about this for a long time, so we're really excited about that. So how can you bike, and I'll show you how this connection occurs. We're really looking to build a connection on the High Bridge Trail that will come into Cuyahoga Falls, and we're working with Cuyahoga Falls to on Front Street to do a road diet, which will allow the construction taking four lanes of traffic, having two lanes of traffic on one side of the street, then parked cars, and then behind the parked cars have a protected two-way bike lane on Front Street that will go all the way through downtown. It will go underneath the Route 8 bridge through the Riverfront Park, if you know where that is, and then connect to the Akron Secondary Trail. So one thing about Cuyahoga Falls right now, it's kind of divided by the highway. So if we have the Akron Secondary on one side and that road diet on the other side, it will allow people to get on the bike, hit that, and go on a bike loop or a protected pedestrian route around the highway. So this is what we're proposing. The red line represents the proposed trail that will start at the towpath on a new bridge come across the Cuyahoga River, come through the site, go in the tunnel, and I'll show you a little bit more about the tunnel, underneath Cuyahoga Street, then over another bridge, and then up to the Highbridge Trail. Another thing about, we have a parking lot. We have this road that comes all the way down here and dead ends. We have another one that comes here and dead ends. So that bridge there will also allow us to connect this loop, which we're really excited about. Instead of having this dead end down there, it actually extends our parkway. So how can we, you know, Cuyahoga Street's a very busy park road. We have park on one side and park on the other side. So what we're suggesting is a roundabout to slow down traffic to really create a entryway into our park and then go underneath the road to allow people to, pedestrians even, go from one park to the next. And then, so what are the other connections? Connection to the land. So much like Sand Run Parkway, we're just going to have this spine road that goes down and has, and unlike Sand Run where you've got some parking off of the, you know, right on the road, we're going to have parking lots off of the road. And then we're going to have, much like this is a picture of Stan Hewitt. Their large front lawn actually is a festival space where they have car shows or baseball games, the historic baseball games. So we're going to have a festival space. We're going to have a large event center. We're really excited about that. And the last thing that I have here, this is actually the map that what I kind of showed you before was just the thought process and the roughing out of it. And this is more of a graphic that shows a more refined version of what the master plan will be. So what you're seeing on here is the there's a roadway network that goes through here. Parking lot by the river, the restored river area, a boathouse where you can store your boats. There's a barn right here. We actually got a grant from the Knight Foundation for $185,000 to restore the barn, and it's really to serve the immigrant population. So, of course, the public will benefit from that, but the side benefit is our park is heavily used by the immigrant population that live on North Hill, and they need a place to gather, so we're going to create a gathering space for them there. And then the event center is more out. What we didn't want to have is people drive down from Cleveland, hey, you're invited to a wedding, drive down, you know, pull up Cuyahoga Street, go to the barn right there, and not really engage. So, and by the way, we're going to have, once we get the barn up and running, we're going to allow people to come out to the site and kind of watch us grow. But the topography here is beautiful, and you really engage the site going this way. The views are beautiful. And then that event center out there really allows you to go out and engage the site. The red line represents a bike network that's going to be constructed through the site. First Energy has a tower along the Cuyahoga River up there, one of those big lattice towers. It was built in the 20s, so it's almost 100 years old, and it's failing. So they need to get out to that tower. They're going to build an access road to get back to their tower. And when they're done, that's our new bike path. So we're really working with the things that we have and trying to, it's a win-win. They get their access, we get a bike path out. And then the black lines represent just pedestrian trails that will be constructed through the site. Any questions?
I have two. Your reforestation, I was actually collecting some nuts for you last fall there with
Thank
the university
you.
Students. Some of those species you would have planted are shade trees, and you've got them in an open field. How are you adjusting for providing shade for those trees, like maples and such, or to grow in a shady environment?
The trees are now, everything's in the wide open. Everything that was planted is in the wide open. By the way, I'm not a biologist.
You've got a forester or something working with you.
Right.
Because you're going to have a lot of death there if we have a scalding hot, dry summer again. Because
right.
We're used to growing in a shaded environment.
Right, so we know that we're going to have some loss. That's why we planted 120,000. And then the soils are very rich, very organically rich. Anytime soil is tilled, usually you've got 4 to 6 inches of topsoil, and when it's tilled, you're going to have 14 inches. So that holds the moisture in the organic matter. So our biologist made sure that we matched the species to the, and I didn't show you the entire restoration plan, which was like a 40-page thing, but they looked at the soils, they looked at the water content, they looked at a bunch of different things. But that is a great question. But we will have some loss, but we know that we're hoping to have about 50% of those.
And your structural location, like the event center and such, are you putting that on the 100-year floodplain?
No, that's up on a bluff, actually.
So I'm high enough?
Yeah, the contours aren't shown here, but there's, again, everything except for this area here and a lower area down here and this whole area, that's all floodplain, that's floodplain, that's floodplain. Okay. So we're really excited to share it.
We're past due for the 100-year Cuyahoga River flood. So.
Yeah, no, we pay a lot of attention to that.
So what is that in the lower right-hand corner? What is that structure that looks like a windmill?
Okay, so there was and here we are. If anybody's been to Shady Hollow, our new lodge, we try to take historic elements from the site, from the park district. In the past, you go into our buildings and there's pictures of somebody took up a flower and a tree, and really we don't celebrate our history. So we really integrated a lot of our historical elements into that building. And we're doing the same thing here. If you're familiar with shopping center up in Cleveland that's got the industrial theme,
Steelyard
Commons. Mm-hmm. So what they did there was they took a lot of the structural implements that were found on site, these big structural pieces, and used them. Our cultural resources group really felt that the barn has, it's a marker on the landscape. It's the last remnant of the last dairy farm in the county. So we're going to restore that barn to look like a barn, and it's going to have this agrarian feel. We have a windmill sitting in a barn out at Silver Creek Metro Park. The windmill used to be the nature park. So as you're driving down the road, there'll be this windmill, which will kind of denote the entrance at the roundabout. And in the background will be the barn. So we're kind of setting this new scene and denoting the entranceway. So we're really happy to be doing that. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
How soon is this going to happen? What's the time frame?
Well, so like I said, we got a lot done already, the restoration of the site. The restoration of the river is the next thing. And we've already engineered the roadway. That's the only thing that we've engineered. But what we've done was we knew how much material we're going to be cutting out of the river, which is sand and gravel, which will become the base for the roads. The road was engineered knowing we need X amount of cubic yards of material, and we're cutting that amount of cubic yards of material. So with the river being constructed, with the river being restored, we'll yield the material that we need to build the road with. All of this stuff takes time. We've got a lot of different things going on, and we want to be good stewards with the taxpayers' dollars and spread the dollars around. We're also, of course, I'm happy to be here with AMNATS, who helps fund some of these things, because when you see we have two bridges and a tunnel and all this, you know, it's one of those things where we're just trying to get the word out and get people excited as we are about things. So the timeline is hard to say at this time, but we're hoping that if we could have everything done in 10 years, I think that would be fantastic.
How much of what you're doing is dependent on the Gorge Dam?
Zero.
Because that's not likely to happen within 10 years.
Well, again, we're working hard. I know a lot of us are working hard to get that dam down. Every year it seems like it gets closer and closer. One of the big things about taking the dam down is the water quality associated with it, obviously. So that bodes well for that happening. I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime, and now I'm actually kind of believing that. Sir?
We still have a very active dairy farm in the city of Green. So maybe you're saying this is the last dairy farm in Akron?
You know what?
It looks on a county, and I'm thinking that's a mistake.
You're probably right. And I need my team up here, the cultural resources people and the biologists to answer all the questions, but you're probably right. And there's a lot of additional interesting history that goes along with the site that I'm not the person to talk to. I'm a landscape architect. This is, you know, putting plans together and working with our cultural resource group to highlight what they've taught us about the site is what we do, but you're probably right. Yes?
Just one last question. Yeah. I find this interesting. I've always heard that if you abandon something, whether it be a building or a road or a golf course or whatever, that nature will just naturally reclaim it. You just did this extra work to just accelerate that a little bit?
Unfortunately, the cultivars of grasses, they're so dominant, it's hard for nature to even get in there.
Oh, okay. Now, a couple years ago, I think it was last summer, maybe the summer before, I was on the towpath and I looked over there, and everything was just a real strange brown. That's because the grass was purposely killed?
Yes, and okay. Then you, at one point you might have looked over there and it looked like the war on Christmas. You know, like all these invasive Norway spruce trees.
No, I didn't. I just remember. And then my friend I was with, we thought, well, maybe since the golf course isn't open, that it was just from dryness. But you guys actually tried to kill the grass?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And that being the main reason is just because it's,
okay,
once these invasives are in there, we do a lot of work on removing invasives from our park, because they don't allow the native plant. I mean, you know, that's how the world is nowadays, unfortunately. Whether it's Asian carp or whatever, it's a problem.
On the calling the trail to the gorge, the bike part of it's the hybrid.
Yes.
Right. Is that all right of way already owned by the Metro Parks or the City of Cuyahoga Falls?
The hybrid trail is owned by. Part of it's owned by us, and part of it is owned. A lot of Cascade Valley is owned by the City of Akron, but managed by the Summit Metro Park. So we have control.
Okay, so it's, yeah, that's right. The south side would be the Akron. And then there's already a walking path. I'm assuming is it all meant to be one multi-purpose, or will there continue? This is beautiful. I mean, I remember when we looked. And we drove to that parking lot off of whatever that road is that dead ends.
Yeah.
You're right. The river is just gorgeous over there. We were there in the fall. But when we were there, we noticed that there already was sort of this trail. I mean, essentially where it looked like, God, all you got to do is throw some limestone down. Or is it more complicated than that, I'm assuming? Or?
Well, okay, so the High Bridge Trail is high. So when you're down, you know, the biggest issue is how you get from the High Bridge Trail. So the history of the High Bridge Trail, I don't know how much time we have.
No, you're still good.
Are you guys
still good?
Yet?
Yeah.
Okay. So the High Bridge Trail, if any of you guys know what that is, there's the history.
And do you want to go back to that? Sorry, do you want to go back to the slide that just shows more of the regional lines? Yeah, so.
Okay, so the High Bridge Trail would be through this area.
Mm-hmm.
So historically, the Chuckery Raceway was a diversion that was constructed within the gorge. So if you paddle the backwater of the gorge, you'll get back there and you'll see this thing. It's got to be 80 feet wide and maybe 20 feet tall, a cut barn stone that's this trapezoid. It was built to... I'm terrible at history, so he looked at Cuyahoga Falls and was like, wow, look at all the industry there and everything that's working just because they can get the water to move a mill or whatever. And he's like, you know, what I'm going to do, I'm going to divert some water and I'm going to run it. And he built this level, like a 0.25% grade flat area, which is the High Bridge Trail now, that was a water. And it was going. It went all the way around to where you, do you know where Euler is, the brick street?
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to build, I think it was called Akron, no, I'm sorry, like a Spicer City or something like that. He was going to build a town there, and he was going to take advantage of this waterfall that he built and harness that power to build a city and have mills and all these things. So he builds this and puts all this money into it, and this is like what the history books say. He was standing there, had bands and this big group. They diverted the water. So they're all sitting there waiting. This trickle shows up. He didn't count on the pervious, the sand veins of the underlying soils. So the water never got through there. So now you have this benched in, perfectly level trail that goes, that was benched into the south side of the gorge. It's the perfect opportunity. We would not have to do anything to it. There's one area where there was a slip and there's a boardwalk that would have to be redone, but the bulk of it is there. And the views are fantastic. We are working on a master plan now for the gorge. We're going to put a couple $100,000 into it this year to access some parts that have not been accessible and allow the public to see some of the beautiful things that are out there. Any other questions, comments?
Yeah, you made a comment early on that you were doing work on the river that would allow stormwater overflow storage.
Exactly.
What are you doing?
There's going to be wetlands that during peak flows.
Those wetlands.
Yeah. So, you know, and I got to say, we're pushing, there's people downstream from us that are building embankments that won't allow the water to access their site. So what does that do? Well, if I'm downstream from that, and before the water could spread out and occupy all this land, and now you're sending millions of gallons of extra water my way, I'm not going to be too happy about that. We're doing the opposite of that. We're spreading the floodplain out. We're creating storage adjacent to the river. Part of this also is where the river is. We have a high pressure cross country, I don't want to call it cross country, but a major gas line that goes across the site. They're going to directionally bore it where it currently is like 2 or 3 feet, or at some places it's as shallow as 2 to 3 feet. It's mainly like 5 feet deep. They're going to bore it so it goes almost 40 feet underneath the river to open up the fact that we can do this work. So it's really been taking advantage of these opportunities that arise in good engineering to make sure that we're not having these conflicts. So it's very exciting. Yes, sir.
What's in the pipeline?
Natural gas.
Natural gas. Yeah. Low pressure or high pressure?
Don't know.
Good to know.
I know. If my civil engineer was here, he'd answer that question. For me, I'm like, if the pipe's going to be out of the way, yes.
Have this great flame in the middle.
Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so finally, the Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'll make it quick. I'm going to talk about James Locks and Black Mountain. So James Locks, who is Jane? Jane is Jane Jacobs. She was a renowned writer, an activist, and an urbanist. She championed the voices of everyday people in city building and neighborhood planning. She had an idea, her idea that cities can provide something for everybody only when they're created by everybody. That idea turned into a movement where people would go out and they would lead these free citizen-led walks and they would talk about their communities. Then that turned into a festival that started in Toronto in 2007 in which they called it the James Walk Festival, where the communities all around the world started to have these walks. And these walks were a way for people to get out in their neighborhood, to get out in downtown, and to explore, learn, connect with the people they're walking with or everybody that is in the area. And it really turned into something that reoccurs every year in the first weekend of May. So these can turn into, additionally, these can turn into catalysts for change, if you're walking a route or walking in an area that could use changes for better pedestrian safety or things like that. So starting tomorrow, which May 4th, 5th, and 6th, we have 18 James Walks in our AMAS area. I'll go through some of them very quick, but I do have an Excel sheet in the back that breaks down the walks by day and time. And so starting tomorrow at noon, we have a couple walks going on. We have bridges, stormwater, and engineering walk. We have a common places together, which starts at the Howe House. We also have at 1 o'clock tomorrow a World War I in downtown Akron. So that walk is led by Claire Lucas at the Sumner County Historical Society. We also have hands-on exchange at 3 o'clock tomorrow, downtown Cuyahoga Falls walk at 3 o'clock, and then in the evening tomorrow, Kenmore Boulevard walk. Reimagine Kenmore Boulevard. So then we have a few on Saturday. We have a couple in Goodyear Heights. Of course, there's also the Bloom Herring Homecoming, which we partnered sort of with to sort of combine our efforts in what they're doing down there for the Blue Heron, and what we're doing is walking. There are some walking tours, but there will be some walks on the trail. And we do have Dory Beltram, who's one of our leaders. She's having a walk at the D Block Quarry. Sorry to put you on the spot, but is there anything you wanted to add about that?
No, I'm really happy to do it, and I hope we get some people to come down. And if anybody knows anything else about the Deep Block Quarry, I have all the general information that you can find on site, but I couldn't find anything. I wanted some really nice, juicy facts about it, and I couldn't
some
find
anecdotes.
Anything. Yeah, you know, something that you just don't read about through the Metro Parks. But, yeah.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes. Please make final selections now.
So we have, and then we have a couple on Sunday, one in Hudson, and then another one on Waypond Drive. So get out there, go to some of these walks. If next year comes around, this time in May, and you want to be a leader, please look for that information to come out. I think we started back in January. Soliciting for leaders to come out and do their walks.
And Daryl, oh, sorry, but these are all rain or shine.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, unfortunately, we cannot control the weather, but rain or shine. Hopefully, it's not thunderstorm.
Beautiful.
Yeah, tomorrow will be beautiful. So, switching gears over to biking. May is Bike Month. And Bike Week is May 14th through May 18th. Bike to Work Day is May 18th. What we're doing here in Amex, what Heather came up with, is we're doing a challenge, a Bike to Work Week challenge, we're calling it. And we're asking that you sign up on Go Ohio Commute. It's all on the flyer here, so we don't feel like you have to write it down. But Go Ohio Commute, then we'll ask you to sign up at Switching Gears website and sign up for the bike contact list. And all we need then from you is a selfie of you on your bike and send it to Heather, and we will choose two lucky winners to get one.
Don't forget, you have to log your commute on Go Ohio Commute. So you don't just sign up, you have to log your commute there. That's key. Sorry, go ahead.
No, great. Thank you. So send yourself a selfie to Heather, and then we will pick two lucky winners to get one for next day at the Hilton Garden Inn East Market. Good stuff. So, and then additionally, there's a lot of events that are going on in May. During that week, the Akron Bike Club has a silent ride on May 16th. Safe Routes to School, which we participate in, they have their students riding, they're encouraging their students to ride their bikes. May 14th through the 18th, May 14th through the 25th at two different locations, Pfeiffer, CLC, and Windermere. And, Akron Bike Club also has a run, bike, and sweep on May 12th. And then throughout the year, there's other events that are going on. There's an event in June, the Topaz Century Ride. There's an event in July, September. And then we also have Bike Aboard, the Cuyahoga Falls Scenic Railroad does the Bike Aboard all season. And we also do Bike and Brainstorms, which I know Fred and I have talked about. And Fred and I have spoke in regards to maybe coming out with a newsletter about biking in some form. So we have to meet a few more times to get through those discussions and how we're going to do that. But We have Viking Brainstorms. We have three commitments from three different cities. We have a commitment on June 6th from the city of Akron to do a Viking Brainstorm, riding down Copley Road. We have a commitment from Ravenna. Ravenna's going to do a Viking Brainstorm on July 18th. They're trying to determine the route at this point. And then we have a commitment from Talmadge to do a Viking Brainstorm on September 22nd, and they are also trying to figure out the route that they want to do. Viking Brainstorms are just public meeting, but you're out there, it's interactive, you're riding your bike, you're giving us, we're going to go through, ride our bikes through the route, and you're going to give us your ideas of how to make that route safer and better for bicycles. Okay? So the only question I have is where everybody's going to walk this weekend. And with that, we'll open it up for discussions. Anybody else have anything on the topics that were discussed tonight?
What's going on with the Akron Secondary? That is not an abandoned railroad segment between Cogga Falls and Hudson. Is this rail with trail, or are you working with Metro? What's going on?
Okay, so the section that's not abandoned is north. So the purple line that's up there, the dashed one, is where we have trail on road. We're going to abandon that, and then we're going to tie into the bike and hike trail. The section of the Akron Secondary north of there is the only section that Metro RTA is still interested in having freight on. The rest of the corridor all the way down is clear.
They've gone, well, from, again.
There's a CSX track.
Right, the parallel. They've pulled the rail up there, I'm aware of that. And
yeah.
That's where you're going to build your trail on that segment.
Yeah.
And you are going to adequately fence the right-of-way with the CSX.
Of course, CSX has very strict rules as far as working with them.
Okay. But the rails will remain intact from the intact track all the way up to Hudson.
When he said abandoned, I think he meant unused.
Out of service.
Out of service.
Okay, sorry.
I'm very particular about that word. We've got an incident going on in northern Portage County that some of us rail activists are trying to work on preventing, and we don't need any more rail picked up. We need to protect our rail infrastructure for the future.
So we did meet one of the things that they freedom, well, I could get into a side conversation, but I hear what you're saying. We're going to make sure, obviously, that our trail users are safe.
I'm not opposed with rail with trail, but with that being an active main line, you'll definitely need fence and protection and some warning signs there.
Yes. Thank you all for coming. Our next meeting will be June 7th. 6:30, we're not sure exactly where we're at. It might be right back here, or it might be somewhere else.
Typically during the summer, we sometimes go somewhere else.
We've been trying to.
With a transportation interest.
Yeah. We're brainstorming.
But we appreciate all of you coming tonight.